from the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Yeah, well, first of all, happy anniversary to Coast listeners, Lisa and Stuart. They just listen and listen and listen. Hope you have a great anniversary and many more to come. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Bolton Howe joins us with an amazing story of a 1941 possibly crashed UFO in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, plus some other fascinating stories, followed by conversations with Linda. Here's what's happening. Four people killed, 14 others injured in a series of shootings in Heston, Kansas. My gosh. Harvey County Sheriff T. Walton said at a news conference four people were killed, including the gunman at the XL Industries plant in Heston. Walton said that there were four different crime scenes in that area, including the XL plant, where dispatchers earlier said they were responding to a shooting. Law enforcement officers killed the gunman who worked at the plant after he began shooting at them. Another person has literally just gone crazy. The XL industry, by the way, manufactures lawn care products. In Iowa, back in the Midwest again, a bill which would allow children under 14 to handle pistols and revolvers under parental supervision passed the Iowa House of Representatives, though it has now triggered an intense debate in the state about the proper balance between gun rights and basic child safety. Boy, the gloves were off tonight at the Republican debate. Marco Rubio, joined in at times by Ted Cruz, launched a battery of attacks against Donald Trump at Thursday's GOP debates in Texas, assailing his lengthy business record and even trying to turn the tables on the frontrunner after he teased Rubio over his debate meltdown earlier this month. Who's watching that for us? None other than Dr. Jerome Corsi. Boy, this thing's starting to get interesting again, Jerry.
Well, there were a lot of fireworks tonight. There's no question, George. I think the Marco Rubio camp and Ted Cruz decided they'd gang up on Donald Trump. You know, the interesting thing is Donald Trump still continues to be the center of attention. No matter what goes on in these debates, how much he gets attacked, he's in the center on the stage and he's on the center of the debate. And when you look at politics from the point of view of who commands attention, you know, whether it's positive or negative, Trump seems to come out ahead in these simply because everybody's talking about Donald Trump.
Everybody is. He's getting unbelievable publicity with all of this. Now, Super Tuesday, of course, Jerry, coming up on March 1st, that will be a telltale for Donald Trump primarily. But if, you know, if he's upended in some of these primaries too, it could be a new ball game all by itself.
It's going to be a very interesting entire change in the election. I mean, if Donald Trump really sweeps the deck, if he comes across with this Super Tuesday winning, you know, the vast majority of these states, maybe all of them, it's going to be very hard for any of the other contenders to challenge him significantly. What the Rubio camp is hoping, and there was a meeting held in New York City today of some 200 donors of a contested convention, which would occur for the GOP if no candidate gets enough on the first ballot, enough delegates on the first ballot in the primaries to win, then the convention could actually be contested and a Marco Rubio or a Ted Cruz might have a chance.
Or maybe even a Jeb Bush. Even though he's called it quits, they may reach back and pull him out.
Well, you know, George, these candidates suspend their campaign. It doesn't mean they're out of the election.
That's right.
It means they just are temporarily not going to be spending money. But Jeb Bush is not necessarily finished, although the chances of him returning are fairly dim. At the moment, it looks very strong for Donald Trump to be the nominee.
It sure does. Okay, thanks very much, Jerry Corsi. That's the take, and on Super Tuesday, we'll have the full results for you. The Merlin Project guys are going to be with us doing their special analysis of that through the eyes of Merlin the computer. Fascinating stories there. But right now, Donald Trump is clobbering his competition. The big story is does Hillary Clinton get the Democratic nomination? And how do they fare together? Well, some of the polls I've seen shows that Hillary would beat Donald Trump So we'll see what happens there. Florida health officials say that three pregnant women in the state have tested positive for the Zika virus. The Secretary of Health out there, Dr. John Armstrong, announced the cases in his daily Zika update. A news release says all three cases are believed to be travel-related, but they're still coming here. Apple has submitted a legal brief opposing the U.S. government's attempt to force technology companies to unlock an encrypted iPhone belonging to one of the San Bernardino shooters one day before the filing deadline. The Federal Bureau of Investigation is seeking Apple's help to access shooter Rizwan Farooq's iPhone by disabling some of its passcode protections. Apple has pushed back, arguing that such a move would set a dangerous precedent and threaten customer security. Lauren Weinstein, expert on the Internet, with us. Lauren, we know your views on this, but Apple still isn't going to back down.
In fact, this is a very interesting part of the legal action here. This brief is now going to be supported. There's going to be friend of the court filings, at least one, possibly more than one, also by Google, Microsoft, Facebook, Twitter, and other organizations who are all taking Apple's side on this. Now, the brief itself is really fascinating, and I really recommend that anybody interested in this case read it. I put a link to it on my main vortex.com site, okay. VORTEX.com. It's just in the middle of the homepage. It's obvious. It's over 400 pages, and what's fascinating about it is it's not just legal jargon, but it gets into all the policy issues and talks in detail about the technology of how the encryption systems work on these phones, the constitutional issues. It's sort of like a master's course in this topic, whether or not you agree with Apple or with the FBI. It's fascinating reading. And it's obvious this is not going to be a quick kind of case.
Right.
Because once these constitutional issues, I believe there's at least two of them, two aspects of the Constitution that are being invoked, it can turn into a long legal battle. It could probably end up at the Supreme Court. And, of course, with the Supreme Court now being short of justice, we might not even get finality then. So it's going to be absolutely fascinating. Another important thing is that basically the FBI is now admitting that this is all about precedent. It's all about this particular case, not so much for this phone, but what they'll be able to do in the future with other phones. And we know there's already 9, 12, however many other phones that just the FBI wants. And if they're able to get access to those phones, we can assume that other countries are going to want to do this too, right? The EU is going to want to do it. Putin is going to want to do it. China is going to want to do it. So we can start down a long path of this. So what happens now is going to be very, very critical to both our security and our privacy in the future.
And, Lauren, with our great information of hackers out there, we got the Kevin Mitnicks, John McAfee, the inventor of his virus software, he is volunteered. Why can't they find someone to hack into that phone?
Well, the system was designed specifically to make it difficult to hack.
True, but right? Failsafe? Is it 100% failsafe?
And Apple's, in fact, Apple's argument here, a major part of their argument is that what the FBI is asking them to do is create a tool specifically, and this is very interesting in the legal arguments about this, the difference between using what's there and being forced to create something that didn't exist before, that would weaken the security in such a way that would make it vulnerable to hackers. So you end up faced with this, trying to balance this particular investigation against all the legal users of these phones becoming more exposed to hackers and terrorists who want to get their personal information.
Now, do you have a problem if Apple downloaded everything in this person's phone and simply gave the FBI a hard printed copy?
If Apple had a way to do that without
compromising anything else.
Right, without compromising the basic security of the system, that's a whole different story.
Why aren't they asking for that?
Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? Because what the FBI, because we know that there are cases in the past where different law enforcement organizations have come to Apple and Apple has cooperated and has gotten the information that was available. But in this case, because the information isn't available, the FBI is trying to go that extra step and say, now we want you to create a special key to compromise these phones to get access to that information. And it's that key that could then compromise all the other phones. That's the crucial aspect of this case that makes it different.
This is fascinating. Lauren, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Lauren Weinstein. Police in a town outside of Cincinnati are searching for a bald man they say was involved in the theft of almost $900 in Rogaine and memory aids from at least three stores. Hey, if he needs it, let him have it. My gosh. Okay, so now we have a dream dictionary. That's right. And up next, Kelly Sullivan Walden joins us. She's an expert in dreams, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Kelly Sullivan Walden, on a mission to awaken the world of the power of dreams. She is known as America's premier dream expert. She's also a certified clinical hypnotherapist, inspirational speaker as well. And I was just with her as a special panelist. She was at our Conscious Life Expo, Kelly Sullivan Walden. Did you have fun at that game show we had, Kelly?
I had way too much fun. That was so great.
That went well. I'm glad some of those folks won. And
you were so funny. It was great to just be in kind of a space of levity in the midst of all the seriousness and all the spirituality. It was really fun. I loved it. I hope you do it every year.
Well, we shall see. And so how'd you get involved in interpreting dreams?
I've been paying attention to dreams since I was a little girl. I have four sisters. My youngest sister, Shannon, and I always shared a room, and we always had these tandem dreaming experiences. So that would mean that we would know the characters that were in each other's dreams, and to this day, we still have this experience. We have this very psychic bond, and because we had these tandem dreaming experiences, we started to pay attention to dreams regularly, and as a result of that, I got good at interpreting them and working with them. And then about 20 years ago, I became a certified clinical hypnotherapist and realized, lo and behold, other people are dreaming too. And when I started to give my clients the suggestion before they would come out of hypnosis that they would remember their dreams vividly upon awakening the next day, I started having my clients come into my sessions with very vivid dream recall. And I found that in working with my clients and their dreams, the healing was expedited tremendously. So now I'm just focused on dreams because it moves things along so much more quickly and helps people get to the solutions they're looking for instantly, practically.
All right. Kelly is, of course, the author of the book, I Had the Strangest Dream, but you've got a new one out. It's a dream dictionary.
Yes, it's the Love, Sex, and Relationship Dream Dictionary, 1,000 dream symbols defined through the steamy lens of romance. So this is really, it's important to, as humans in this dimension, having relationships and knowing how to mate and relate and not just attract love, but grow love is of incredible importance to all of us, whether we admit it or not. And I decided to focus this dream dictionary, not just in the generic way that most dream dictionaries are focused, but to really get lasered in and look at all these dream symbols through the lens of how can this dream be helping me to make my relationship better, my all of the aspects of relationship, not just sexuality, but all aspects. And I'm finding that so many people are telling me relationships are really one of the most puzzling, perplexing, difficult issues that we deal with as humans. And it's helpful to know that our dreams are giving us insight.
Now, some of the information in the book, of course, talks about specific things that people might dream about. Like if you dream of a reptile, it tells you certain things. It's amazing how that all works. And is that pretty uniform, Kelly, for everybody? If everybody dreams of an alligator, whatever.
Oh, my God. You did not just say that, George.
Yes, I did.
I just had a dream about an alligator last night.
You did?
Now you are the psychic one. Okay.
Well, I've been known to do that, but why would you dream of an alligator?
Okay, well.
Well, be careful now. This is a family-oriented show.
Well, this is PG-13, but to me, there are universal symbols. I was just having this conversation last night. Our dreams, because we're all humans, we have so much in common, more in common than not. So, but yet we are unique and individual, and there's unique things happening to each of us. So in general, we could say that a crocodile gut, this is very revealing, represents underlying anger. And I can say that there's
anger.
Anger, because they come up from the mud, from the swamp. They're definitely a shadow character. Normally, they are animal medicine. Of course, they're made from divine energy, just like everything else is, just like mosquitoes and cockroaches. However, most people relate to alligators and crocodiles as scary creatures. So, for me, I'm a very nice person by day. So often, when I get mad about something, I can tend to shove it down until it's time to really have to deal with it. So to me, that dream was telling me, Kelly, you're going to bite somebody, you're going to hurt somebody, and you might hurt yourself unless you really find a constructive place for this energy. So thank you, George, for calling me out.
There you go. So many people will have dreams that are, you know, precognitive dreams.
Yes.
And these precognitive dreams sometimes are spot on.
Oh, absolutely. One of the dreams that I think is so stunning in the previous book that you and I talked about was Chicken Soup for the Soul, Dreams and Premonitions. There, you asked me, but can you dream about people that you haven't met yet? And there's a woman whose story we write about in the book who had been having a very difficult time finding love and romance. She was very focused on her career and hadn't made time for any significant relationship. But she has this dream about this amazing man, and they're having this wonderful life together, and she sees him in vivid detail. He's wearing a plaid shirt. She knows he's athletic. He's a skier. And she doesn't live in an area where there's any skiing going on, and she tells her friend over coffee the next day about this incredible guy that she met in her dream. And her friend turns completely white and says, I know that guy. He's a friend of a friend of a friend who I just saw a picture of the other day. He lives in Aspen. So they ended up getting together, and cut to present day, they're married now. And they are an amazing couple. So sometimes our dreams can be precognitive. They can help us fix our relationships or help us attract somebody that we might not see, because our conscious mind is just limited, and our unconscious mind, our subconscious mind, can see everything.
What is it about dreams that people are tapping into? It's like, as I've always called things like that, the wireless internet out there in the universe.
Well, in our conscious mind, we're connected to our logic, our reasoning, the things that we know about in a very concrete way, and yet who we are as beings. We are multidimensional, multifaceted, infinite beings we're unlimited, and our dreams lift off the lid to what is normal and rational, and it takes us way beyond, and it can introduce us to our future, to help us to heal the past, help us to commune with people we've never met yet, with avatars, with wise beings, with aliens, with solutions to problems that we would never have the intelligence to solve in this concrete three-dimensional reality.
What about messages from the dead, Kelly? They seem to visit us in our dream state. How come?
We're a captive audience when we're sleeping. In our wake, I think our departed loved ones are probably trying to communicate with us all the time. I just met a woman who told me that her husband passed away a few months ago, back in November, and he was the type that would have sent a dream to her, and she was so disappointed that she hadn't had a dream about him. And I told her, just because you don't remember the dream doesn't mean that he's not trying to communicate with you. So what you need to do is set a very clear intention and then let it go and tell him in your own meditative way that you trust his timing and that you're going to release the static on the line and be this clear channel so that you're not attached. But set a very clear intention that when the time is right, you will hear that dream, you will see that dream, and you will remember it upon awakening. So within a few days, sure enough, she did what I told her to do, and she called me crying and said that her husband, her departed loved one, her departed husband came to her in the most beautiful dream, and she did remember it, and she felt so healed. So in many ways, just because we're not dreaming about them doesn't mean they're not coming to us. But when they do come in, it's usually because we're sitting still finally. Normally we're running around like, you know, chicken without a head in our waking life, and no one can get to us. So it's wonderful when we have these dreams. Incredibly healing.
All right, we're going to be back in a moment with Kelly Sullivan Walden. We're going to take your calls. If you've got dreams and you want a little help, check in with us. And also, Kelly has her own radio show in the L.A. area. It's on 1150 a.m. It's called Dreams Unzipped. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast, Kelly Sullivan Walden with us. We're going to get to your calls because we don't have that much time. Linda Moulton Howe joins us next hour. Fascinating information in the book, Kelly. It really is cool.
Thank you, George. I appreciate that. Thanks for your endorsement, too, by the way.
You are very welcome. You deserve it.
Thank you.
How long did it take you to put it all together?
A lifetime, probably multiple lifetimes. But from the day I got the book deal all came together, I spent a solid year getting up in the morning and writing all day long and putting it together. So it's been a blazing glory of a year putting this together.
Well, it looks like you had fun doing it.
I did. Carl Jung has the red book, and I have the hot pink book. So there. it feels like it's doing a lot of good. A lot of people are telling me that their relationships, they're getting the best relationship advice they could ever get is coming in through their own dreams. And
well, you know, the best thing for a guy to do is to buy the book and just put it on a coffee table at Starbucks or something and then have all these women swarm around him just to look at the book.
Exactly.
It works like that.
Exactly. And I tell people, even if you don't remember dreams, you can just play the game where you flip through the book and land on a random dream symbol and use that as a talking point or use that as an oracle or a message for your relationship for that day.
All right, let's take some calls here as they line up for you. We'll go to Michael in Key Largo, Florida. Great song out there, too. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
How are you guys? So this is my excuse. I wanted to call and tell you about this dream a while back, but there was no real reason to until you asked for dreams tonight.
And now you've got an expert who can help you interpret it.
This is going to be a funny one. So it's very simple. I was like a maintenance worker or a janitor. I think I had like a broom and a garbage can in front of me, and we were outside of your building. It was like the Coast to Coast building. Well, not so much, but you were just the star of that building. and I was outside, and it was a nice sunny day. And you had walked outside in your sand, khaki, desert-colored pants with a black belt and a black tucked-in collared shirt. And you were just eating an ice cream cone. Eating an ice cream cone, looking back at the building that you worked in with just this proud hand on your hip sort of look.
Going, I made this building.
And I was in the awe, like this awe moment of, oh, there he is, you know, there's the guy. And that was the dream.
That's more like a nightmare.
No.
Michael?
Nightmare.
No. But, all right, so Kelly, what would you say about a dream like that?
So I think this dream is very interesting. I think that often dreams will show a struggle and a solution or an outcome. And if everyone, according to the late great father of psychotherapy, Carl Jung, according to him, everyone and everything in our dreams is us. So here's Michael, he's working, he's a maintenance guy, he's sweeping. To me, that tells me that he's cleaning his act up. He may be cleaning up his relationships. He may be sweeping away the things that don't work for him. And then the George Norrie aspect of him, which may symbolize success or being tapped into all of the things that Michael wants to be tapped into, he's so cool that he's got an ice cream cone. And to me, when there's a dessert or sweet in a dream, that represents just desserts. It means a sweet moment in life. So I think that Michael, the dream is showing Michael, if it were my dream, I would think that it's about make sure that you continue to clean up your act, and then you will have the success. You'll come into the glory and the sweetness that you're looking for, whether it be in your dreams or obviously in your relationships or in your career or whatever that.
Because maybe we're watching you, Michael, and that's where I pop up.
Absolutely. You're omnipresent, right, George? That's true.
Let's go to Idaho. Kathy's with us now on Coast to Coast on the Wild Card Line. Hey, Kath, go ahead.
Good evening.
Hi.
George and Kelly. I got in late on your program, but I heard that she is interpreting dreams.
We are.
And it doesn't have to be particularly romantic relationship, does it?
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
Okay.
Even the dreams that don't seem to be romantic at all can definitely relate to those areas. But let's hear it and we'll see.
Well, I'm an older lady now.
Okay.
Anyway, I moved to this apartment in June of last year, and I had lived in my previous place 12 years. Well, when I moved here, between June and July sometime, I think I had a dream, and I say I think because it might have been a reverie, but it seemed dreamlike. I had seen pictures in old photograph albums of my mother, who was born in 1909 in Chicago, and so she was a teenager in the 20s. And before she met my dad, and they got married in 1930, she had a boyfriend, and I happened to know his name because she wanted to know whatever became of him after my mother had a stroke, which left her not being able to speak very well when she was close to 80. Well, no, actually, when she was in her 60s, and then she had her final stroke when
very young.
I was living with her. But anyway, okay, so the picture is of my mother as a young girl on the beach with her boyfriend, who she called Sock, S-O-C-K, and they were just so happy together. And I took it to mean that my mother had somehow found her old boyfriend again, and that she was happy. She and my dad, I think she was there for my dad and kind of was, I don't know, a catalyst in my dad's life, I would have to say. But their relationship was very tumultuous.
But she hung in there, though.
She did for 53 years.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Wow. Well, this feels like it's just like I was saying in the previous dream to Michael about just desserts. I feel like this is showing, I happen to resonate with what you said, Kathy, that this feels, and it is a romantic dream, and not necessarily for you, although there could be a ripple effect in terms of a peacefulness. But to me, I get a real peaceful feeling and a happy feeling that she's transmitting a message to you that she is doing well. And often, I believe on the other side, we'll identify with a time in our life when we were really thriving and kind of go back to that time. And often the beloveds on this side of the veil will see images of them in that way, so that you can see her that way and know that she's happy and thriving, and in some ways having a freedom from any of the worldly concerns that she had. So that if it were my mother and sending me a message like that, I would feel incredibly peaceful and really happy for her, and then happy for myself and more freed up to be able to pursue the things that I want to pursue in my life. So I hope that gives you some freedom, Kathy.
Good advice there, Kelly. I wonder how many people understand, too, the power of dreams in order to accomplish things, to get things done, whether it's a project you're working on that you can sleep on, or maybe you want to communicate with somebody. I'm a believer, Kelly, that you can send messages in a dream state to other people. How do you feel about that?
Oh, we absolutely can. Everything that we know about what it is to be human and how intelligent we are, it's like the tip of the iceberg. And through dreams, we absolutely can do so many things. And some of the greatest inventors have been able to. I mean, we have lights and we have electricity because Thomas Edison dreamt about the filaments in the light bulb and even clothes on our bodies, because Elias Howe at the turn of the century dreamt about the sewing needle and was able to connect with these things. So some of the greatest inventors and playwrights and great storytellers have gotten their best dreams, gotten their best ideas through dreams. And yes, like what you just said, we can communicate with people through our dreams. We can heal relationships with people that are on the other side. I hear about it all the time. We can receive information. I mean, this is kind of a silly example, but I talked to Monica Potter, the actress. It was right after she had been nominated for an award for her. She played a part on a show called Parenthood,
mm-hmm.
and she got a message from her departed father, her father who had died, and he said, "Sweetheart, I love you. I'm so proud of you, but you're not going to win tomorrow. I'm telling you this not to disappoint you, but I'm telling this to you so that you'll enjoy yourself for being nominated. That's a big deal, and then you're not going to be disappointed on camera in front of everybody." And so she took that message, and she felt her father's love wrapped around her. She went to the awards ceremony, and sure enough, she didn't win, but she felt like she had won because she
felt like
this great communication, and she didn't have to mask the disappointment like all the other nominees. So
it's an honor being nominated.
Exactly. Hello. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think we're always getting messages from our departed loved ones. They're always trying to help us. And even the ones that aren't, we don't have to wait until we're on the other side to be able to send messages to people that we love or that we want, that we've fallen out of touch with and that we want to heal. I mean, the past relationships. I often, since this book came out, I'm hearing so many stories of people that had a tumultuous previous relationship and there's no way of getting in touch with them. But I tell people, you can heal it through your dreams, through your intentions. Just know that the work that you do in dream time is valid and it does have three-dimensional implications.
Let's go to Andrew in Austin, Texas, east of the Rockies. Hello, Andrew.
Yeah, around 2000-2001, I was working at the airport and I was under a lot of stress and I used to sleep during the day when I got home, but I had a dream that I was in O.J. Simpson's penthouse apartment. In the dream, I was a third party, or I think I was his dog, actually.
Huh.
I was an animal, or I was a third party presence in the room. Mm. They were talking among themselves,
wow.
and then they started laughing and smiling at me because they felt like maybe he knows I'm actually... This is going to sound weird, but they were fearful that I would know that I would under that they were fearful that I was a presence in the room that knew his culpability in the matter, his guilt in the matter. I wasn't all that interested in that case. I had very little to do with it, but I was aware of what was going on. So in the dream, when I woke up, I was very assured of his guilt, and I don't know why. But they were talking among themselves. They were looking at me and smiling. But I was a third-party presence, and I believe I was an animal in the room.
Well, let's get your take on that, Kelly. Of course, we all know he was legally acquitted. But what if Andrew actually tapped into, via dreaming, a real conversation?
Well, most of the time I look at dreams symbolically, but from the way that Andrew is describing this dream, my sense is that it feels like an actual experience. It feels like he did break through the walls of separation and he kind of landed inside a conversation that normally he wouldn't have had access
to. Yeah, that nobody would have had access to.
Exactly. So this does happen and sometimes it happens with, you know, you step inside the reality of a famous person or a high profile kind of experience, and sometimes it's just a person or a couple or a family that you have never met. You have no idea why you're there, but there's a reason that you're hearing the information that you are, and there's something that you're meant to. There's a reason why that happened, and I don't know if you've been able to connect the dots, Andrew, about why you. I always tell people, when you wake up from a dream, meditate on the question, why this dream, and why now?
And what does it mean? What happened last night? Things like that.
Even if it's not for you, it might be for somebody else, but at least, and if the answer isn't clear, then at least don't shrug it off. Just hang out with it and see if something comes later, like meditate on it in the days to come. But that was a long time ago. I wonder, Andrew, if you ever did connect the dots about why the dog and why there.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. Why do some people just not remember dreams, Kelly?
I think most people in the Western world don't remember dreams because they're not easy to. We have to go out of our way most of the time to remember them, because in the morning when we start to wake up, when we transition from deep sleep to wide awake, the way that we think in dreaming is so different than the way that we think when we're waking up. And if we don't deliberately go out of our way to write those dreams down and to lay in bed just a few moments before writing the dreams down and just replay that the last few images that we had, just a few times. I say three is the magic number. And if we don't do that within the first 2 minutes of waking up, 99% of the time the dream, no matter how profound it is, even if it was the meaning of life, it was the winning lottery numbers, it was the answers to every question you've ever had, it will tend to disappear unless you go out of your way to get it. So that's why, like you read in the beginning, or you said in the beginning, George, I'm on a mission to wake people up to the power of their dreams so that they don't take their dreams lying down. We don't need to feel powerless in this world with all the crazy things going on. Our dreams are giving us the guidance that we need to be able to not just survive, but thrive in this amazing world we live in.
Let's go to Tacoma, Washington. First-time caller Rick is with us. Hey, Rick, thank you. Go ahead.
Good evening, George. Hello, Kelly.
Hi. Hi, Rick.
Pleasure to speak with you guys. I was born colorblind, and I'm currently losing my sight. And macular degeneration, and but I dream so vivid, very vivid colors all the time. And I have this is a little unusual, a reoccurring dream of somebody that I knew when I was 18 years old, and I'm in my 50s, and dream of her constantly, and she's, you know, I've been dreaming of her, well, probably for the last 3 years, a few times a month.
Wow.
That's a lot. That's intense.
It is. And, you know, and now I'm suddenly single after a 13-year relationship.
Bingo.
Well, yes. I want to know if there's any correlation there.
What's happening here, Kelly?
I want to make sure that I followed this. So there was somebody that you knew from before, or is this somebody that the person that you're dreaming about, is this?
The person that I am dreaming about, I had a relationship with her, oh, my goodness, 14 years ago.
In real life.
Okay. Well, this is one of the four pillars of dream work that I talk about in the Love, Sex, Relationship Dream Book is that every remembered dream requires some form of action in your waking life. So it wouldn't hurt to go reach out and see if you can find her on Facebook, social media, or wherever you think she might have lived or worked, because you never know. This kind of thing, sometimes these things work out, or sometimes it's a step in the direction of what might work out. There's a story exactly about this in Chicken Soup for the Soul, Dreams and Premonitions. A woman had had a relationship in her early 20s, hadn't seen the guy in 20, 30 years, and her husband had passed away, and suddenly she's dreaming about this man, and it turns out he had been dreaming about her.
I was going to say, what if she's dreaming about him?
Yes, exactly. And in this case, she actually had a dream that his wife was pushing him toward her and pushing her toward him. And it turns out that his wife had passed away and she was playing matchmaker.
Whoop.
And there's something going on with these dreams. So good luck, Rick. Follow up with that.
Okay, Rick. Thank you. Good luck to you. That's great information. Kelly, about 40 seconds left. Tell people about your website and where they can get your book.
They can get the Love, Sex, Relationship Dream Dictionary anywhere dreams are sold, anywhere books are sold. My website is kellysullivanwalden.com. And if that's too hard to spell, you can go to ihadthestrangestdream.com. You can also get a free 15-minute dream session with me if you go to Dream Life Coach Training and want to check that out. And also, I have a free dream declaration meditation that I'd be happy to send to all of your listeners if they go to kellysullivanwalden.com. Send me an email at info@kellysullivanwalden, and we'll send them a free declaration meditation so that they can remember their dreams more vividly.
Great. And you're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as well. Up next, roving reporter and our investigator, Linda Moulton Howe, joins us with some incredible stories. I mean, folks, incredible.